Welcome, welcome, curious souls, to the Macabre Emporium, your sanctuary for the unusual, the mysterious, and the appalling.
Step through our cryptic doorway into a world where secrets whisper and enigmas come to life.
I'm David.
And I'm Sarah.
Together, we're your custodians of the macabre, guiding you through tales that defy the ordinary.
Discover the untold stories, from lesser-known cases of true crime to the bizarre events that captivate us.
Join us on a journey to the shadows where the mainstream fades and the extraordinary beckons.
So whether you seek the bizarre, the eerie, or the chillingly obscure,
you're in for a treat here at Macabre Emporium.
Welcome back to Macabre Emporium. This is Clearance Bin 3.
And if this is your first time joining us, welcome!
Welcome!
So this week we will not be having our On This Day because we had to scrap last week's episode and move it to this week. So if you're looking forward to On This Day, I'm sorry, but not the much sad trombone for you.
You'll just have to Google.
We got a new toy, so that's where some of these effects are coming from. I'm just throwing it on a whim, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And that was also part of why there was no episode last week, because I needed more time, and then work decided to throw a mandatory Saturday at me, so that cut, like, all the extra time out I needed. So, just a small clearance bin episode for you guys this week. So what do you have, Sarah, for Clearance Bin Volume 3?
True crime and true crime.
Oh, double shock.
What do you have? History?
I have history.
Shock.
I know, isn't it? And unfortunately, I don't have a dramatic pause button yet.
Okay, so shh.
Wait, hold on.
That's not dramatic.
Nope, I thought it said crickets. Oh, well.
Crickets is
Oh, this one on the next to it. There we go. But there's always everyone's favorite.
No, it's not.
Oh, yes, it is.
It is not no one's favorite, especially not mine.
We're going to use it at some point.
For what?
I don't know. It'll come into play. You know, there's always also the censor button I can use on you, too.
Yeah, don't, because that's just going to annoy me.
Okay.
Don't do that.
So, are you ready to get started?
I am, because there's literally nothing else to talk about.
All right, let's get going.
Koi fish have always been a part of Asian culture. For us super white people, you often see them in the disgusting man-made ponds inside of the Chinese buffets. They've always been thought to bring success and strength, which if you know, have a restaurant, you want it to be successful. So I forgot where I was going with that.
Apparently you forgot.
Yeah, fitting. That's what I was looking for. Fitting. Kois were originally called Nishigakoi, which translate to swimming jewel. But they're really just Japanese carps. Like we have the carps here in the rivers or whatever. Mm-hmm. It's their version of a carp, but they're absolutely beautiful fish. Have you ever I know you've seen koi, but
right.
Do you like remember?
Yeah, they're almost like calico cats, basically. Some are.
Don't. That's literally in my script.
Why did you ask me that question?
So you could throw in your two cents about koi fish.
It was, yeah, because I've seen them white with black and orange spots, so they're like calico cats.
Which is literally my next line.
That's like one of my special talents, remember? To grab shit out of your script without even seeing it.
Anyways, they're absolutely beautiful, so swimming jewel makes perfect sense. They are most often multiple colors between black, orange, and white, but there are some that are gold. Like,
mm-hmm.
Not like goldfish gold.
Right.
But actual gold. So, if you think about it, they really are just calico cats of fish. They all vary in size from small to large. Obviously, the larger ones are worth far more than the little ones. For a general idea, a single koi fish can go anywhere from, how much do you think?
A couple hundred dollars, maybe.
Anywhere from $10 to $20,000, depending on many factors like size, color variation, and lineage. I couldn't find anything out about the just straight gold ones.
Yeah.
But I've looked into them, and there's some that are super rare, like just white, like pure white and black dotted,
mm-hmm.
like Dalmatians almost, and okay. Those are very expensive.
Oh, I'm sure. Probably the more, like, colorful, I guess, are probably more higher end, and then, like yeah. You said, lineage.
And size.
Yeah.
And they also live a long time, like 30 years. So when you buy one of these, it's definitely a long investment.
Yep.
In 2023, the Grosvenor Pulford Hotel, which sits near Chester, England, happened to have a very large pond with all sizes and colors of koi in it. Needless to say, they had a lot of money just swimming around in that pond. This would be an easy catch for anyone looking to make a quick buck. Like, we've watched shows where you see people inside of, like, aquariums, basically, that will just reach in and grab a fish and toss it in their bag and walk out with it. It's not hard.
Right. I don't know why people think that they can get away with doing that.
Right. Well, that being said, the hotel started noticing that the amount of koi that they had originally was diminishing by a lot. They knew the amount they had and could easily tell that at least 50 of these gorgeous creatures were missing. Someone was stealing the koi. There was absolutely no doubt about that. They didn't have cameras, which, I mean, being a hotel, you'd think you'd have cameras just for the safety of the guests alone.
Right, but when was the time period on this?
2023.
Okay, so they would have cameras, because I was thinking maybe this was much earlier story, like 70s, 80s or something you happen to find.
No.
So there wouldn't be, like, the cameras like they are today everywhere.
Nope. Which is why I'm saying, like, you'd think they'd have cameras. Right. But they didn't, dummies. So there was really no way of seeing who was actually taking the fish. In total, they suspect they had lost about $125,000 worth of koi. Which is a lot. That's a lot to me.
Yeah, that's a lot in fish.
Well, yeah. But it would make sense since the size of the fish that were taken were relatively small to medium at most, making the vanishing fish about $2,000 to $3,000 each. Which is, again, a lot to me. The local ads and trading posts were watched to see if anyone made an ad stating that they had, like, a large number of koi available right. for sale. Because they're like, you know, it's not really a normal thing to see. The local ads and trading posts were watched to see if anyone made an ad saying that they had a large number of koi for sale. Because it's not something that you normally see, you know, like a lot of koi at once.
Right. So that, like, would kind of like on Facebook Marketplace, you're always constantly seeing brand new tools for sale. It's like, that shit's hot. I know better.
Yeah. Like you would know that if it's not coming from a reputable place, right. it's probably not a legit sale. But nothing ever popped up in an ad, nowhere. Which made the police and the hotel staff, you know, scratch their heads. They decided the best course of action was to actually put in cameras.
Oh, now we're going to put cameras in.
That would have been a good spot for the crickets.
True. I wasn't on it.
I know.
I still got to get this thing figured out, but anyway.
And they have a few angled directly at the garden and the pond itself from different angles, so that they can try and catch whoever it is that's taking
yeah.
their beloved little fishes. And it didn't take long for them to get their answer, and they were absolutely shocked at who the culprit was. Rather, what the culprit was. See, when they checked their CCTV footage, they didn't see a person. They saw an otter. An otter had been coming to feast, and they had very expensive taste, apparently. What shocked them most was that the otter just waltzed through the garden grounds, past the front doors, past numerous windows for the guest, you know, rooms, and absolutely nobody saw it. No staff, no guest, no nobody.
Like, how did nobody see an otter? Because if I remember right, they're not very small to begin with. They're probably about the same size as, well, probably like two Lugosi's, maybe.
Probably closer to three.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I don't know, because they don't move super fast.
Right.
How do you not see that, like, slide its way through the front door? Or past the front door?
I don't think they slide all the time.
Well, I just imagine them, like, kicking off and just sliding, skinning their skin as they go. No, I don't imagine that. The otter was smart and found a way to bypass getting zapped by the electric fence that had been put in place to keep large birds out from snacking on the koi. But this otter came in, grabbed a fish, and took off full speed out of the garden. and off the hotel grounds before anyone could see it. A literal thief in the night.
Yeah, it probably had taken a couple zaps first to figure that out, obviously.
Maybe. Andrew Nelson, the director of Nelson Hotels and Inns, which runs the Grosvenor Pulford Hotel, said it was definitely a surprise, to say the least, to find an otter was the culprit for our huge loss of fish. With the fences we have installed previously to protect smaller fish from herons, we didn't expect any large animals to be able to access the pond areas. With the amount of koi we lost, we are trying to find a solution to prevent any further loss. How about putting a dome over it?
I don't know.
A dome or, you know, I don't know. Do you know?
No.
This is not the first time that there is an otter versus koi crime to make history. In Singapore, in 2020 and 2021, there was a gang of otters known as the Zook family that terrorized the streets and neighborhoods like common thugs. First of all, who named it the Zook family?
Who knows? Unless it's after the species or something, or their owners were known as the Zooks or something, maybe.
I don't know. One time, they actually got caught going for a swim in a koi pond while snacking on the residents of that pond while swimming laps. Just no fucks to give whatsoever.
I guess not.
So if you take nothing else away from the story, remember this. Otters are hardcore gangbangers and petty thieves, so watch your back.
Hardcore gangbangers and petty thieves, huh?
Yeah. They're bastards.
So normally with Clarence Ben, it's Sarah has two stories, I have two stories, but like I had mentioned in the beginning, Ork decided to
fuck you over.
I guess we can say that and screw me over or whatever fun words you want to use. That could have been a good time for me to bleep myself, but anyway.
Oh, you want me to say it again so you can bleep me?
Oh, you're going to allow me to do it?
Yeah, the one time.
This is the one time?
When I allow you to, it's cool.
All right.
What did I say?
You said fuck me over.
Okay, I'm going to say,
all right.
Oh, you mean when they fucked you?
Yep, just like that.
Okay. All right, I'm going to do it for real now.
Yeah. Okay.
Oh, you mean when they fucked you over?
Yep.
Nice. Well just played like that. With that button. You knew it was coming.
That might be my favorite button from now on.
Oh, man.
But anyway. So with all that said, you ready to hear about a 16th century kind of bromance kind of deal?
Sure.
So with my time cut short, I did find one story that really stuck out to me after reading an article about two congressmen who would end up dueling after one got called corrupt. Usually these are one-day events to restore honor by putting your life on the line to do so. So soon after that, I started looking into more, and I found what is believed the longest duel in history.
Okay.
Now, most duels aren't usually held to the death. They are typically held until one surrenders to the other. The longest duel in history started in 1794 between two French military officers, Pierre Dupont and François Fonnier. Fonnier was a skilled swordsman and had already killed many men in previous duels. His latest triumph was against a man named Blum, and this made him an unpopular person with the local population where he lived. They believe Fonnier challenged Blum over some insignificant matter and used Blum's inexperience with a sword making unnecessary to kill him. General Moreau was having a formal ball this evening on the same day as Blum's funeral was being held and didn't want Fonnier to attend his ball. So with his instructions to DuPont, he told do not allow Fonnier to admit into his ball if he happened to show up. Well, Fonnier did try to make an appearance regardless of how the town folks did feel about him, and he was denied entry by DuPont, and of course, Fonnier challenges DuPont to a duel, and in their first duel, DuPont drew first blood, injuring Fonnier with a quick sword thrust to the torso, and this would cause DuPont to drop to the ground. DuPont then asked Fonnier if he wanted to continue, and Fonnier replied, "I certainly do, my dear fellow, and before long, I hope." A month later, after recovering from his injuries from their first duel, these two would fight again. In the second duel, DuPont would be seriously wounded, but he also was not satisfied with the outcome and told Fonnier, "Next time we shall have to finish."
Just the way people talk back then is silly.
Yeah, I just wish that I could have found a voice changer for like being a French
Aw, wee wee.
Yeah, ah, wee wee. Or something like that. I don't know. So, anyhow. So now DuPont and Fournier meet for a third time, and this duel would be a draw, lack of a better term, as both would end up become injured. However, it was clear that their sword skills were evenly matched. As a result of this, they agreed to continue their duel, but set rules that they both would abide by. So, rule number one, every time DuPont and Fournier shall be within 100 miles of each other, they will each approach from a distance to meet, sword in hand. How the hell they would know they're within 100 miles of each other? I'm not wondering if I meant to put meters and not miles. Because you could probably see each other from at least 100 meters, not 100 miles.
That's 300 feet.
You could still see somebody at 300 feet.
Yeah.
So I probably screwed up and put miles instead of meters.
Because like 300 miles, that would be all the way to my dad's place and half the way back.
Right. I was probably meant to put in 100 meters.
Oh my God.
But anyway. So rule number two, should one of the contracting parties be prevented by service duties, them being in the military, he who is free must travel the entire distance so as to reconcile the obligations of service with the demands of the present treaty. Number three, no excuse whatever except those resulting from military obligations will be admitted. Number four, the present being a bona fide treaty, no alteration can be made to these conditions agreed upon by the contracting parties. So with these rules set in place, they would go on to duel for a total of how many years, do you think?
Well, you said this is the longest duel in history.
Mm-hmm.
I'll say, how old were they? Did it say?
This wasn't started in 1794.
But how old were they?
And I couldn't find dates.
Sick. 60 years?
No, not that long.
40.
Less than that still.
35.
19 years.
Oh.
So they would go on a duel for 19 years straight. Even in their ongoing duel, they both would still send letters of congratulations to each other when promoted in the military. From Fournier, my dear DuPont, I hear that the Emperor has just promoted you to the rank of Brigadier General. Accept my sincere congratulations. I have two reasons to be delighted at this appointment. First, the satisfaction afforded by your advancement, and secondly, the facility now vouchsafed to us to have a trust at each other at the first opportunity. It's unclear if this was from the original set rules or from them amending their original set rules, but they would only duel if they were both of the same rank in the military. My guess is it could look dishonorable if they fought if one of them was a lower rank than the other, but this would wait but they would wait months or even years until they both of them would reach the same rank in the military to continue their feud. Their feud almost came to an end when they happened to run into each other in Switzerland and began dueling indoors while chatting casually, catching up on their lives since they last met. So I'm like picturing like from like the Princess Bride and the whole conversation that they're having, fighting upstairs and everything else. That's like what I imagine when I read about that.
Oh God.
It would be here in this meeting that DuPont pinned Fournier to the wall by driving his sword through the neck muscles of Fournier. DuPont believed he finally had won, but Fournier would remind DuPont. He would remind DuPont that if he would lower his arm that was holding his sword, he was prepared to thrust his sword into DuPont's belly, and again, this became another draw. What finally brought their 19-year duel to an end was a marriage proposal, and I don't mean between these two in a bromance kind of way. DuPont had proposed and didn't want to leave his new bride a widow. They then agreed to use pistols instead of swords from here on out.
Because that's better.
So instead of stabbing each other, we're going to just shoot at each other from a distance.
So it didn't really end the duel then?
No.
God.
So probably easier recovery possibly from a gunshot wound than a sword wound because, you know, slicing through clothing, it's got all the germs and debris and everything from the outside air and everything on it. So probably could be why this rule change, because maybe a lead shot might be a little bit healthier, I guess, like a better way to put it, other than being shot with hot lead. But Fournier was a better shot with pistols than DuPont, as he would shoot the pipes from the soldiers' mouths when out on the battlefield. This could be a defeat within itself, because at this time, muskets are very inaccurate, and rifle barreling wasn't more common in firearms until the 19th century. Do you know what rifle barreling is?
Mm-mm.
So think of like an opening scene from James Bond where it has that spiral pattern inside the barrel.
I've never seen James.
Okay, so think of like a soda straw with spiraling in it.
Okay.
So what that spiraling does, it makes the round rotate to keep it more accurate shot. So musket guns didn't really have this, so it can basically go wherever after it would leave a barrel. And wouldn't be nearly as accurate with it spinning through the air like most firearms do now have this rifle barreling. I'm sure if I'm wrong, I'm going to get told by somebody.
Oh, I'm sure.
DuPont, knowing this, he would add a stipulation into their duel. There is a little nearby woods which is at my disposal. We shall enter the wood armed with a pair of pistols and a horse, and then having separated and being out of sight of each other, we shall track each other down as best we can and fire at our convenience. So it waters down to DuPont wants them to hunt each other on horseback with pistols.
Oh, because that sounds like a good time.
Fonior agrees with this and then warns DuPont not to move on with his marriage plans as he is sure to die a bachelor. They would then meet in the woods, shake hands like they always did before their duels, mind the one probably the one time in Switzerland. And then they would part ways into their designated starting positions in this small patch of woods. And their one versus one version of the most dangerous game is on. After several minutes of spotting each other, hiding behind trees in the forest, neither one of them took a shot, not knowing what the other would do or might even try. DuPont finally decided to take up tactics that could be almost cartoon-like. DuPont remembers how skilled Fonior is with a pistol. He would expose part of his coat from a tree, which quickly drew the attention of Fonior, and he would shoot, leaving only a hole in DuPont's jacket about the size of his thumb. Now, with only one shot left, DuPont still having both of his, he would next hold out his hat, carefully to draw Fonior's attention again, causing him to shoot his last shot that he had. So now at this point, DuPont still has both shots. Fonior has no shots because these are one-shot dueling pistols.
Mm-hmm.
DuPont would emerge grinning with both pistols cocked like a 1980s action hero, telling Fonior, "Your life is now at my disposal, Fonior, but I shall not take it. However, you must remember that I retain my right over it. Take care never to cross my path again, for if you do, I shall send my two bullets into your brain as I am entitled to do at this moment." And this would bring an end to the longest and probably most cordial duel in history.
God. That's such... You'll see women doing that shit.
Actually, funny you mention that, because God. I did see not too long ago about two women that did duel topless.
When?
I don't remember because I read it and I forgot to save it. I will have to look into it again and give you the story. And another honorable mention, which they believe is just all legend, is about two men that went up into hot air balloons and had a pistol duel in...
That's not fucking terrifying.
Right, because, I mean, easily you could have finished it by shooting the other's balloon out, but that probably was against the rules, basically.
I would hope so. So if they shoot the person they're aiming at in the hot air balloon, is there somebody else in there that's commandeering the balloon?
Yeah, who knows?
So it just goes down wherever
it goes. Just gotta wait till where it comes down and hope he's not dead.
Damn. That's a whole bunch of nope. No, thank you.
All right, so what's your other true crime story you got there?
It's about a bunny.
A bunny?
Mm-hmm. That stole a car.
Okay.
That's it.
A bunny that stole a car.
No. Nope.
Was it the bunny man from West Virginia that stole the car?
No. This one's a little strange, because the things that happen you wouldn't really correlate with who did it.
Okay.
Antron Singleton, known mostly by his stage name, Big Lurch, is a rapper. He's also a poet and convicted murderer. I've never heard of this guy, ever, or the group he's in, which is called Cosmic Slop Shop.
Nope, never heard of it either.
But I'm assuming it's like hometown.
Right.
Celebrity fame, I don't know.
Could be.
He was born on September 15th, 1976, and spent most of his childhood years in East Dallas, Texas. He started writing poetry at the age of 7, and by the age of 15, he had started rapping and grew hometown fame that way. When he wrote the lyrics to his music and started rapping, he tended to focus on what people typically assume all rap music is about. Gangs, sex, violence, drugs.
It's not boats and hoes?
Not boats and hoes, no. Maybe a hooker lip, but no hoats and bows. I'm fucking done.
There's your Michigan Mothmouse finally showing up in an episode.
My Michigan Mothmouse?
Yep. Your Michigan Mothmouse too while we're at it.
I love when that happens. You try to make fun of me fucking up and you fuck up yourself.
Anyway, let's keep going here. Enough about me.
Oh, man. However, some of what he wrote wasn't stereotypical at all, since he also went over less typical things, such as serial killers, vampires, and cannibalism, just to name a few.
Okay, so there's a black metal band called Macabre that does the same thing, but anyway.
We're not talking about a black metal band.
I know. So
it doesn't make any sense. It's whatever. He was trying to make a name for himself and was starting to until his 24th birthday in 2000. He was involved in a car accident that caused him... He was involved in a car accident that was caused by a drunk driver in the opposite vehicle. His injuries were pretty severe, like broken neck severe.
Okay.
As you can imagine, pain management was definitely something that had to be taken into account. Big Lurch was given numerous types of pain medications, and none of them worked for him, which I can vouch for. A lot of the pills that I've had to take aren't very helpful either. So he did the next best thing he thought, and that was to turn to street drugs where prescriptions wouldn't help. He got turned on to angel dust, or PCP, and that actually seemed to help him.
Most people start with weed.
It's the gateway drug.
Most people start with weed for painkiller. No, we're skipping straight to PCP and angel dust. Holy shit.
Angel dust is PCP.
Oh, okay.
Anyways, the side effects of angel dust were not the greatest. The one he had was quite large. He had very vivid hallucinations. But that didn't seem to matter to him. He continued taking the angel dust for weeks.
Well, yeah, because he's just not worried about his pain anymore. He's worried about the gremlin hanging out in the corner trying to kill him.
He had been neglecting himself the entire time, so he wasn't eating, he wasn't, like, taking showers as he needed to, and he was growing increasingly delusional. Big Lurch hit a point where he truly believed that the devil was living inside of his roommate's stomach. So saying a little delusional is probably lighter than it needs to be.
Yeah. So, yeah, he's not worried about the pain anymore. He's worried about the devil inside of his roommate's belly. Get out of there, devil. Go on, get out of there. Get out of my roommate. It's his week to pay.
Oh, my God. On April 19th, 2000, Big Lurch explained that the night had been pretty hazy to him. He was with people that kept handing him angel dust to smoke, and he just kept smoking it. And the next thing he knew is that he woke up and he was in jail. But what exactly did Lurch do?
Blacked out, apparently, and did some penis, I'm guessing.
I was hoping for some fantastic story about the gremlin and him going on an adventure and not... Well, blacked out, apparently.
Sorry, I wasn't ready for it.
That's fucking great. Well, you know, great.
Hold on. So it's like, hold on. Wait a minute. And they're like, story time, kids. Anyway.
According to the witnesses that were there that night, Big Lurch asked everyone to leave except for his roommate's girlfriend. 21-year-old Tynesha Yesias stayed behind, and while the two were alone, all hell broke loose. Apparently, Big Lurch viciously attacked her. He beat her until he was too tired to beat her, so he grabbed a knife and just stabbed her in the heart.
Okay.
Yeah. No biggie. Now, to kill someone is already fucked up, but this rapper, he was going to take it to a whole nother level. He cracked Tynesha's chest open, removed her right lung, and then he ate it. In fact, Tynesha's autopsy revealed that he had sampled tiny parts of her.
Okay.
There were teeth and bite marks on her face, on her arms, both of her lungs. Big Lurch was caught up with and arrested after being seen running naked down the street, soaked in blood. Cops said when they got to him, he was barking like a dog and staring straight up into the sky. Oh, shit. He was taken to a hospital and evaluated and had medical testing done, which determined that he had both the flesh and the blood of Tynesha in his stomach. He was sent to court and put on trial with the charges of murder and aggravated mayhem. Big Lurch, of course, pled not guilty by reason of insanity. He wasn't insane. He was high. There was a huge difference. Anyways, on November 7th, 2003, Big Lurch was found guilty and was sentenced to life in prison without the eligibility of parole for both charges that he had been handed. Defense tried to argue that his use and the amount of angel dust in his system at the time would have put him into a psychotic state. Thankfully, the court was smarter than that and said that his intoxication level and his claimed insanity plea was an insufficient reason to justify the crime. The attorney made the mention that drug use can't be used as grounds for an insanity plea in California, and that the judge upheld that. Because again, not insane. Fucking high.
Right.
I just wonder if he was, like, if he had a moment where he was, like, in Debo's kitchen, or chicken coop, sweating like slave. Do you remember that part from Friday?
No, not really. It's been so long since I've seen it.
Chris Tucker's character. It's the greatest. I was in Debo's chicken coop, sweating like a slave. Anyways, that's that. Rapper Cannibals. Yay!
Oh, wait, hold on. Oops.
Yay!
So yeah, that's it. It's like super short this week because of work, you know, trying to screw me over on things. So
they weren't trying to screw you over.
Oh, they weren't.
They were trying to.
Too soon.
Yep. They weren't trying to screw you over. They were trying to fuck you over.
So yeah, with the new stuff that we got, there's pretty, you know. There's a touchpad with predetermined sound effects, voice changing stuff on it, so I'll probably use more of it and the more I get to play with it and everything, so.
Yeah. I imagine he's going to try and bleep me out a lot.
No, probably not.
So I'm sorry if the next time I read a story, all you hear is.
Yep, you know, that's Sarah.
Anyways.
So, I think it's time we get out of the Emporium, Sarah, today. What do you think?
It doesn't sound any... Ooh, I sound different. You didn't sound different.
Oh, I didn't? Okay. Stop playing with stuff.
Do it again.
All right. So, I got to change it. I think it's time we close the Emporium up for the day, Sarah. What do you think?
I agree.
So, until next time...
Creep it real. Remember to creep it real.
Okay, bye.
Bye. Please go and check out our website at macabreemporiumpodcast.com. Join our Facebook group by searching Macabre Emporium. Like and subscribe on YouTube at Macabre Emporium Podcast. Follow us on TikTok at Macabre Emporium Pod. Follow us on Twitter at Macabre Emporium. If you have any stories of the paranormal, your local true crime, or weird history that you would like us to look into and possibly do an episode on, email us at macabreemporiumpod@gmail.com. And remember to follow, rate, review, and share whenever and wherever you can to help us grow our podcast.